Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Om, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of a Shabbat teaching by Rabbi Adam Kligfeld.
What I want to do for part one of this is just study the verse of the Torah, which, you know, doesn't sound so radical, but so often when we do studies like this, we take a verse and then immediately we're in the commentaries. I want to linger on what the verses themselves mean. And it's from the first Aliyah Parshat Kedoshim. Parshat Kedoshim is often the second part of a double Parsha, but this year, because of a leap year, we needed more Shabbatot to get through all of the Torah. So a lot of the double Parshas have been split. And we're going to kind of pick up right in at the top of page one. V'chi tizbechu zevach shlamim. When you offer, literally slaughter, because the word zevach is slaughter, but offer as a sacrifice, zevach shlamim. There's no simple way, forget about translating it, understanding exactly what it means. Zevach means a sacrifice of. Shlamim, from the root shalom or shalem, meaning
peace,
wholeness, completion. Our best sense is filtered through the rabbinic tradition. By the time the rabbinic tradition was interpreting it, we don't necessarily know what happened in the previous 1,000 years to know exactly how it was understood in real time. But kind of a non-obligatory, you're bringing an offering to the altar to either express gratitude for well-being, but there was another sacrifice called a korban todah, which was a thank you sacrifice, or to bring well-being, to represent well-being, something like that. It was not obligatory. It's not because you had committed a sin. It's not because it was a holiday. It was just a sacrifice that you might bring. Ladonai, to God. Lirtzon chem tizbechu. We could also spend a long time figuring out what lirtzon chem means, and we wouldn't know the answer. Ratzon means will. Will in the sense of ani rotzeh, I want, right? Ratzon is one's will. Ratzon Hashem usually refers to God's will, as we understand it. This is lirtzon chem, for your own will. What that means, we don't know. Does it mean you should do it for yourself? Do it as you want to do it? Do it so that your will, you know, my will be done, right? It's hard to know what it means, but take it at face value. If you're doing a shlamim sacrifice, it should be done in some way for your will, for your well-being. Biyom zivchachem, on the day that you offer it, ye'achel. It's got to be eaten that day, okay? Umi macharai, or the next, right? You offer this sacrifice, and the rules for when sacrifices should be consumed and who consumes them were different by category. In this time, if you offer it, it should be eaten. Umi macharai, you might know the Baraita word machar. Machar means tomorrow. Macharai here means on the next day. Vahanotar, but if there's any leftover, ad yom hashlishi, on the third day, ba'esh yisarit. It's got to be burned up in fire. Let's just pause for a second. Joy, do you give me the microphone so in case you want to say something? Just take it off of this. So, yeah. Right? You know, just be a curious Bible scholar or just a curious thinker, right? Assuming we have some sense of what lirtzon chem means for your will, and assuming we have some sense of what a shlamim is, why do we think that the consumption of the sacrifice should be eaten that day or the next day, and by the third day, even if you had been able to preserve it, you know, refrigerators, but maybe they had some way of salting you preserve it. By the third day, you got to get rid of it and burn it. Why? No wrong answers.
Because you shouldn't delay it. I would think that one should not do that.
I would not think that one should not delay it performing a mitzvah. And at the same time, one should prolong performing a mitzvah.
Should or should not prolong?
Should not prolong.
Okay, so part one I'm curious about, right, that maybe by saying you can't do it 2 days from now is a goad to say, get it done now, and we'll give you until tomorrow, not the day after. But couldn't you make the argument that if this is a mitzvah to consume this, extend it? Why can't we continue this mitzvah over 3? Like, why wouldn't we want a mitzvah to be prolonged? I'm offering that as a rhetorical question. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but okay, so that's one possible idea. What else? Tyson?
I'm just thinking that maybe, number one, to separate it from, like, that you're ordinarily killing meat and using it for the next couple of weeks to make it clear that you're doing the sacrifice, the purpose of the sacrifice. And then, given that you only have 2 days, you might invite a lot of people over to be included in that. So,
lovely, lovely. Yeah. Right. So, this is not eating. This is sacred eating. This is not just hunger. This is fulfilling a divine ritual. And good, right? If you think about the rules of Pesach, right? Every family had to slaughter a goat, and then you created a chavura. It's appropriate to say the word chavura in this house. You created a chavura of people to consume it because none was supposed to be left over, and a family can't eat an entire goat, right? So maybe Tyson is offering the reason why this sacrifice for well-being has to be eaten by the third day. In order to make that happen, you got to invite people. Love it. Okay, let's hold on to that as well. Any other initial thoughts as to why? Okay, keep going, because it gets even more more intense. Ve'im he'achol ye'achel ba'yom ha'shishi. If you don't do what the Torah just said you should do, and it is eaten on the third day, pigulhu. Pigul is an interesting Hebrew word. It's translated here as tainted meat, meaning at that point, not only should you not do it, but consuming it is itself sinful. It comes into a category of not, hey, you should have done it yesterday, but it's almost treif, right? It's treif in the sense that you really shouldn't eat it. It's a different category of a prohibition than treif food. It becomes something you shouldn't consume. Lo yeiratzeh. If you eat it on the third day as part of your offering, if you buy into this kind of cosmic system and your offerings are being accepted, this one will not. God is saying, I will accept your eating out on day one. I'll accept you on day two. You eat on day three. It's like a hamburger and it's a thing. It has no connection to the mitzvah. And then it gets even more intense. The ochlav avono yisa. And if you eat it, you carry your own burden of if I use the word avon in this sermon this morning, of twistedness. You've twisted and done a sinful thing, and you carry it. Ki et kodesh adonai chilel, you have profaned God's sanctuary. And now the harshest condemnation. V'nechrata anevesh ha'im yemeha. You are cut off. Your soul is cut off from your people. To be cut off from the people is considered in rabbinic understandings of punishments, the worst punishment of a sin in the Torah, worse than death by the Beit Din. Death by the Beit Din meant that you committed something that you should have done and you're executed by the Beit Din. Whether it ever happened in history, no one knows, and it's almost irrelevant because you're trying to understand like the infrastructure of the ideology. But consider worse than that is that you might live a full life, but your soul is cut off from the Jewish people, and in the world to come, you have no stake, right? Just because you ate meat on the third day. It's a pretty, there are not that many transgressions that bring what's called karet, be cut off. This one is. I'm going to keep reading. Verse 9. U'bakutzrachem et ketzirartzachem. When you are harvesting the harvest of your land, lo techalep at sadcha, don't complete the corner of your field, teya. The way teya, agricultural, is the same word as teyas that a chassid wears, because the teyot are the corners of your beard that you're not supposed to cut off and let them grow. Lo techalep ve leket ketzircha, lo techalep. And don't basically, another way of saying it, and don't complete all of the harvest. You got to leave some back. Verse 10, v'char machal lo t'olel. Don't glean or overglean your vineyard. Uferet kar machal lo t'lachet. Don't, the extras of your vineyard don't gather. La'ani v'lager t'chazobotam. Leave them for the poor and for the stranger. Ani adonalotam. I'm what you got. Verse 11, lo tignogu, don't steal. Lo techachashu, don't deal deceitfully. Lo techakru ish ba'amito, don't, one person should not lie to another person. Verse 12, lo techagru b'shmila shachar, don't swear to me falsely. That's an echo of what we have in the Ten Commandments. V'chilalta et shem adonai, shem olhecha adonai, because if you do that, then you are profaning God's name. Second time we have the word profane in the section, it was profaning God's holiness by eating this meat on the third day. You're profaning God's name if you call out to me not in truth. The lo tashok b'kriyecha, some people translate it as that you shouldn't withhold from your your peer or your neighbor. Some people understand as you shouldn't you shouldn't oppress financially your neighbor. The lo tigzol, don't rob. Lo talin pulat sachir ka'aboker. And if you have owe someone money for work that they did, do not let it stay over until the morning. Talin, from the same word that we get malon, hotel, place where you sleep. So don't let that payment sleep until the morning. Okay, that is a 5 through 12. It's a 9-verse section from the first Aliyah Kedoshim. Where in this 9-verse section do you notice kind of new paragraph? And what might be the connection between paragraph 1 and paragraph 2? Marshall, let's give the mic to Marshall.
The first paragraph is our verses 5 and 6, A and above. And then everything else. I'm sorry, A above and hey through chet. That's the first paragraph.
5 through 8. Okay.
Second paragraph is 9 through whatever the last
12, 13. Right. And just spell it out, even if it seems obvious. What shift do you see going on from after verse 8 into verse 9?
Well, the first four are sort of religious obligations regarding the sacrificial system, and the second seem to be having to do with one's relationship with one's fellow man.
Good. Now, the Torah doesn't have always an obvious way of saying new subject, right? It doesn't go, right? Sometimes you'll see a break in the text, right, to suggest that we're starting a new topic. These just run right into each other as if it was a single revelation, right? So if we agree with Marshall that 5 through 8 deal with the obligation to consume the shlamim within 2 days, and if you don't, your soul is denied connection to the Jewish people. And verses 10 has to do with agricultural and ethical responsibilities to your neighbor, and that seems to be an abrupt shift. If we had to suggest that there is a connection between part A and part B, and that the Torah is not just stitching these together randomly, what might they be? Why would part B follow part A? Tyson and Marco.
I mean, kind of following up on what I was saying before, if you're supposed to sacrifice and then eat it all within 2 days, if you don't eat within 2 days by yourself, you have to share with a bunch of other people. And so just like if you have a harvest, you know, you're leaving some for other people. So if you have like all this meat, you have to burn it, you might as well share it with the poor or whatever. If you let it go, then it's like you're taking food away from the poor. Or if you keep it for yourself, you're kind of profiting from the sacrifice for yourself instead of profiting, you know, helping the community.
Lovely. And if you follow that line through, every verse that follows verse 8 could be read through that prism, right? That don't take it all for yourself, leave some for others, verse 9. Don't overeat / don't over glean your vineyard. Don't steal, to suggest that the leftover food actually doesn't belong to you, it belongs to someone else. So maybe this is random. Maybe we're developing an association that wasn't there. Or maybe the Torah, in what was called a hekesh rabbinic thinking, like a juxtaposition, maybe juxtapositions matter. And maybe we're forced, or we should be forced, to ask, how does the section that comes next connect to the section before, and maybe the glue here is the obligation to the one who has less. Marshall, were you going to say something?
Similar.
Okay. So with that in mind, let's see if anyone goes in that direction or a different direction. Okay. Look at page 2, verse 2. This is the commentary of the Ha'amek Davar, which means to go deep into things, written by the Netziv, Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was a great scholar and Rosh Hashiva in the late 19th century in Lithuania. And on the phrase, B'yom zivchachem yechel macharat, the phrase from the second verse, that on the day of your offering it, it should be eaten, and then only tomorrow, he says, U'mitzvat achilat hashlamim, the mitzvah of consuming this type of sacrifice, Mo'elet is helpful, biskula, in the kind of the merit of, almost even the magic of, lahavi shalom. He says something about eating the shlamim is supposed to contribute to shalom in the world, right? That it's not just nicknamed this sacrifice for no reason. You bring it for whatever reason you want to bring it, but eating it the proper way is supposed to bring shalom. Vahainu, and we should add, chukei Hashem. These is in the category of the law of the mitzvot that are chukim. There are several divisions of the mitzvot of the Torah. There are the divisions between the thou shalt and the thou shalt not. There are divisions between the mitzvot that are between us and God, between us and one another, and between us and ourselves. And there's also a division between the mishpatim, which from the word shofet, which means judgment, meaning the rules that kind of make sense and any society that wants to thrive should have it, like don't steal and don't kill and don't commit adultery, right? You can understand why, right? Versus chukim, which has to do from the root chakak, which means just to engrave. It's just cut by God as law, and we don't know why, right? Trying to think of it, like shatnez, right? Like the obligation to not mix wool and linen. You could come up with a reason, but there could be a million parallel universes, each of them having 1,000 different cultural societies, and they wouldn't come up with that, right? You would like to think that if you had a million parallel universes, each of them with 1,000 societies, and they were developing a community, most of them would say, don't steal something that belongs to you and don't kill. But they might not say, don't wear wool and linen together, right? So those are considered chukim. Chukei Hashem, these chukim of God, she'en lanu da'at, that we have no understanding, enoshi, human understanding, bazeh, we can't possibly fathom it, avalmi kol makom, nonetheless, came, right? So the Hamek Dabar says, yeah, you shouldn't eat it until the third day. I mean, you're not allowed to eat it on the third day. It's supposed to bring well-being. And if you ask me why, my answer is, I don't know. God told us not to. And for some people, and maybe for us on some level, that should be enough of a reason, right? Parents in the room, right? You tell your child, you can't do so-and-so. Why? I said so, right? So sometimes there's a why, sometimes there's not. Sometimes you don't want to give the why. Why do you not want to give the why? Because then they can argue with the why, right? Sometimes you actually, a system needs a certain kind of automatic assumption of obedience, right? Because if everything is, nothing is questioned, it's a totalitarian society. If everything is questioned, then you can't get anything. Right, so Hamek Dabar is basically saying, yeah, go ahead and knock your head against the wall and to try to figure out what was so significant about not eating on the third day. You ask me, okay, Hashem, this is, you know, maybe it'll bring well-being to the world, but we don't know what. Okay, that's how he answered it in the 19th century. 20th century, Hal Kushner, my quote this morning on a different source, says this on this source. Paul, is the microphone near you? You want to read what Krishna says?
Yeah, help me out with the Hebrew.
Shlamim, just source 3.
Okay. The command to consume the shalim.
Shlamim.
Within 2 days is meant to encourage the donor to invite the poor to share in the meal.
Ding, 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 ding. Tyson, you and Rabbi Krishna are like this. Okay.
Similarly, the subsequent command to leave the corner of the field, the fallen fruit is motivated by the desire to have a share or bounty with the poor. Even the poor person, owner of a small field, must leave a corner of the harvest for others. But the cool story of Ruth, read on
Shavuot,
turns on Ruth's right to glean in the fields of her affluent neighbors, to care for the poor who are fashioned in God's image, is a form of worship.
What a lovely comment. This is Krishna had the tremendous ability to write a sermon in 4 sentences. And this was a sermon, right? Awesome. He's basically saying, well played. I aspire to Rabbi Krishna. I do actually. No, in addition to his brilliance, he was known as being very concise and packaging things really well, right? He reads the verses similar to how Tyson and Marshall did. This is not an accidental smushing together. This is meant to say, you think there might be a division between ritual law and eating meat on the one hand, and how we treat one another in our society on the other hand, and they're actually connected. And don't you dare think that you can just hoard all this meat and eat it on the third day. By the way, Shlamim, you paid for the animal. And so that's, you've invested in this. And so therefore, you want to consume it for what? You put it in the freezer, eat it for weeks, right? You have to have it be consumed. And it says the reason is so that you are forced to bring people. Either, I think, Tyson, you were suggesting, friends and family, not a bad thing as well. He's connecting it specifically to the people who otherwise wouldn't have enough. And then he connects it to the story of Ruth, which we're going to now read in about 5.5 weeks. The only way that we get through that story and get to celebrate the giving of Torah is that Ruth was given an opportunity to glean for free in the field by Boaz, and therefore King David, the builder of the Israelite dynasty, is born, right? And his wonderful quote to care for the poor. Okay, good. Source 4, it's called Sefer Yisodei HaTorah. It's written by a rabbi who's known by his acronym Shadal, Shmuel David Utsato. He was a 19th century, he might have lived into the early 20th century, Italian scholar. When I taught him a few times before, what he was interesting, the way he was interesting in terms of Jewish intellectual history is that he spanned, in a way very few did, the true European yeshivish total immersion in Jewish text world, and he was an academic, and he was a scholar, and he was beginning to ask questions that, Haredi Jews don't ask, right? And he didn't leave the former community to join the second community. And when the Enlightenment came to Judaism in Germany in the 19th century, it almost became one or the other. And it certainly has, that division has split. Utsato was trying to do both at the same time. He was a fully traditional, orthodox, pious, non-apologetic, faithful Jew. And he was a man of the sciences and ideas, and he explored, and he allowed kind of historical readings of the text to influence how he understood the Torah. So he was a fascinating guy. And look what he says on our verse. Ba'od to'elet acheret hayta korbanot hayatid. There was another benefit to these individual sacrifices. The who, and what was it? Aside from the part of it that would go to the Kohanim, the Kohanim would eat some of every sacrifice. That's the only way they ate. They had no, their only income, the only source of food were these sacrifices. The stuff that was left over for the owners, the ones who bought the sacrifice, Hayu ha-ba'alim mukhrachim. The owners were obligated. Mukhrach is another way of saying obligated in a different, in addition to chayab. Mukhrach doesn't mean like religiously obligated. It means like forced. Like the situation was that you were forced, la'achlo, to eat it, b'chavera, in a group of people, im zuatam, not just themselves. Ki lo hayu resha'im la'hashir mimeno adem acharat o neged hayu sashi. Because they were not permitted to have it left over past the second day and the third day. Vehine, and behold, Hamashalem Yidrol Adonai, if you are completing your vow to God, Al Chesed Asher Asalo, on the goodness that God had done for you, that's what a Shlamim offering was, saying, well, I just feel so filled up and so taken care of, I'm going to offer a Shlamim to God, you made a vow that you do it. If you fulfill it, you were forced by this law to use that sense of well-being to make other people happy. How much better would society be if half of the time we did something because we felt that we were blessed, that what we did was intended and was effective in making others feel happy? And if we truly shared our blessings rather than just pour them on ourselves. So that's exactly the intent of this law. By doing that, you would connect with a connection of love with other people. Asher lo yada b'mor shel shom, whom you didn't know the previous day. Stranger. You're supposed to share this bounty with strangers. Or at the very least, it would people who are ani, poor, edyonim, down their luck, would be able to enjoy your meal with you. And then, so he says, and that is borne out by verse 9, right? That spot right after verse 8 that Marshall said it jumps, because the next verse deals with that very obligation. Therefore, in our parsha, achar shehizkir, after the Torah says, that we offer the sacrifice, etc., that you should do it on the second day, etc. If you haven't done it on the third day, etc., etc., and that you bear your sin for that. After it says all that, he's kir miyad, the Torah immediately mentions mitzvah acheret, a different mitzvah. Asher lechora, that at first glance, as we discussed, ein lashum shechut mitzvah zo. First glance, it does look like new paragraph. Okay, I learned about the shlamim, and now I guess I'm being taught some laws about being nice to the poor people. You could make the argument it doesn't have a connection. And these are, repeating the verses, they are, when you're doing this harvesting, don't go all the way to the corners. Vezeki mitzvat achilat hazevach, and that's because the obligation to consume the zevach liyom echad on one day, o l'shnayim or two, ki domeh lemitzvat hanachat apei apesedek. It is similar to, it's an echo of, or a pre-echo of the obligation of leaving the field for the poor. Mitzad shan nechaven ba. Because if you do it with intention, you are intending to do an act of righteousness and loving kindness. What I love about that is it breaks the misapprehension that you can be firm in your ritual life and justified being a scoundrel in your economic life. And no one is perfect at that, right? I'm sure I'm guilty as charged many times over. But I think the most painful thing for me in Jewish life, and I will say even in our synagogue, is when I see people who are pious and precise and punctilious about prayer and worship, and who forget that the next verses are related to your worship as well. And that if you're coming to surely bring the Jewish life with a sense of openness to being obedient to God's will. But when it comes to leaving the corners you feel to others, or all of the things that extend from that, basically treating the people around you with dignity, if those you consider to just be like throwaways, or you know, that's what Reform Jews are focused on. I'm focused on davening, but Reform Jews can do the social action. It's a repudiation of these verses. And it's a repudiation of what we like to think of as a non-accidental juxtaposition. Right? And so I think that's a healthy challenge in both directions, though. It's a healthy challenge for those who are taking the ritual law seriously and all that we do in the realm of prayer extended from the realm of sacrifice. So we don't do sacrifice anymore, but prayer replaced sacrifice. So if you're careful about prayer, great, I am too. Right? It's a challenge to us to think about how our prayer life is connecting to our ethical life, and the reverse, right? Because we're not a secular humanist tradition, and there's nothing wrong with a secular humanist tradition, but that's not what traditional Judaism is. If you're very careful about the laws that are and the actions that are similar to making sure that the poor have something to eat and that you share your bounty with others, great, right? What about your prayer life? What about your connection to the realm of the whole? What about the ways in which you are extending yourself upward, not just out? We used to say in rabbinical school, as we watch other rabbis move their careers, that you know, rabbis usually have really three sermons that they just give over and over and over again, right? And on some level, that's true, right? I mean, yeah, I'd like to think I have more variety than that, but I'm certainly aware after the fact, and sometimes consciously during it, that there's certain messages that are really pounding away in my heart, my mind about what it means to live a Jewish life, and this is one of them. And I'm sometimes like thirsty to find the text that reinforce that I'm not making up, that have come through the centuries to make this argument. It's not what people generally focus on Parshat Kedushin, but it's right there for the harvesting, pun intended. I didn't know how long I was going to get this material, and it's taken a long time, which is great. What you have in sources 5, 6, it's just 5 and 6 and 7, if you want to prove your own time, are interesting halachic sources about the obligation to be generous to the poor, even if you are among the poor. How seriously Jewish tradition took the sacramental act of giving tzedakah. It's not just about helping someone else. It's actually by giving tzedakah, you are engaged in a ritual act not so different than the sacrifices. And therefore, even if you don't have a lot, even if you have nothing, right? Sometimes they would give, you'll see, they would give poor people money so they could give tzedakah, so that they would have both the joy and fulfill the obligation of giving to others. It's not just the person needs it, it's you need to be given.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.